This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, GEICO makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to GEICO.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. GEICO.com. Easy.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Taking aim at big oil. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka. It is Thursday, January 28th. Glad you're with us, and here's what we have for you this hour.
President Biden has signed three executive orders regarding climate change, including one that suspends new oil leases on federal land.
The Department of Homeland Security has issued its first ever alert for domestic terrorism, but with few specifics.
Small investors are banding together to push shares of GameStop sharply higher. We'll explain why.
And once you get your COVID vaccination, then what? Because your body needs about two more weeks until there's max protection.
So then after those 2 weeks, you have either 94% chance of not getting a severe case of COVID, essentially, or 95% chance. But you can still get an asymptomatic case of coronavirus. It's unlikely that you get symptoms, so you could still transmit it to people, and that's where things are a little dicey.
Elizabeth Buchwald at MarketWatch on life in a pandemic after you're vaccinated. Framing climate change as a matter of national security, President Biden has signed an executive order suspending new oil and gas leases on federal land. He signed a total of three executive orders yesterday. A second one directs the Department of the Interior to double offshore wind production by 2030. And another instructs the agency to figure out how to employ Americans on climate-focused public works projects. He also set a goal for delivering 40% of the benefits of all federal spending on climate initiatives to poor and minority communities.
In my view, we've already waited too long to deal with this climate crisis. We can't wait any longer.
Mr. Biden also told major government departments to take action aimed at curbing greenhouse gas emissions and the country's reliance on oil. Many, especially technology and retail companies, have been pushing for more support for clean tech companies like renewable power developers and battery makers. The oil industry sees massive job losses in Mr. Biden's initiatives. The Department of Homeland Security is out with its first ever national terrorism bulletin about violent domestic extremists, warning they could attack in the coming weeks following the assaults on the Capitol 3 weeks ago. More from this morning's Mike Gavin.
The DHS advisory said violent extremists opposed to the government and the presidential transition could continue to mobilize to incite or commit violence. It did not cite a specific plot. The bulletin, in effect until the end of April, said that violent extremists have been motivated by issues like COVID restrictions, the election results, and opposition to immigration. The most recent DHS bulletin was a warning about cyber attacks from Iran, and it was issued last year. The agency did not issue an advisory ahead of the D.C. riots. Gordon.
Thanks, Mike. On a related note, a California man has been charged by federal authorities in connection with the Capitol riots. Authorities say 44-year-old Ian Rogers of Napa kept a collection of homemade pipe bombs before sending text messages indicating he wanted to, quote, blow up a Democrat building. Well, the Biden administration's White House COVID-19 task force has held its first virtual briefing, warning we could surpass 500,000 deaths within weeks. Dr. Rochelle Walensky, director of the CDC, said yesterday there were 4,000 deaths and 140,000 new infections just on Tuesday. She also addressed side effects of vaccines.
These are all normal and expected part of getting the vaccine, especially the second dose. And these symptoms mean that your immune system is revving up and the vaccine is actually working.
Other notes, Eli Lilly announced that its monoclonal antibody cocktail cuts hospitalizations by 70% for high-risk COVID patients. And how about this for efficiency? Oregon health workers who got stuck in a snowstorm on their way back from a COVID vaccination event went car to car injecting stranded drivers before several of the doses were to expire. And Dr. Anthony Fauci, top medical advisor to the White House, now recommends wearing two masks. That is not something we have heard from the CDC.
start your day smarter. You're listening to America's First News, This Morning with Gordon Deal.
Thanks for joining us. Welcome into Thursday. President Biden wants to more than double the federal minimum wage to $15 an hour, and Democratic allies in Congress have released new details on legislation to lift the wage floor in phases over 5 years. The federal minimum wage, as you know, has been $7.25 an hour since 2009, with a patchwork of states increasing the wage floor above that minimum. Here to break down the potential increase is Eric Morath, economics reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Eric, explain.
So President Biden can't lift the minimum wage on his own. He needs it to pass Congress. So that's the first hurdle. And but we got a lot more details on that this week because Democrats in Congress laid out their plan. And it would be a five-year phase-in. So we wouldn't jump from the current rate of 7.25 to 15 immediately. We'd be looking at about 2026, depending on how fast they move, to get to 15. But we'd get gradual raises along the way. So those lower-wage workers, many of them essential workers during the pandemic, would see pay increases if this passed Congress.
Would this apply to all businesses, Eric, even the mom and pop small businesses?
Yes, it would apply widely across the country. And the bill actually takes steps to remove many of the sub-minimum wages that are in place now. Of course, phasing those out as well, but for example, restaurant servers can be paid a lower minimum wage because they earn tips. There's also some exceptions for people with disabilities or people who are younger than 20. All of those would be eventually phased out under this bill.
Wow. All right. So I guess that can mean what? Food prices go up, right? If you have to pay the servers more.
Yeah. That's, you know, higher costs of labor in a service-based economy could result in, you know, higher inflation. There's been some experiments that places in the country, including California, have already eliminated this tipped minimum wage. And there's been stories of that, you know, some restaurants put on there that, you know, your server is getting paid $15 an hour. So, you know, feel free to not tip them as much and kind of offset your costs that way. But yeah, no, certainly, you know, could have an effect on inflation if everyone from your, you know, barber to your server is getting paid a little bit more.
There was a critic of this policy in your story who said the $15 an hour is based in politics, not economics. Explain that.
Yeah, so $15 an hour for several years has been the rallying cry of the, you know, this Fight for 15 movement, which is a union-backed protest and campaign to raise the minimum wage, you know, across the country, especially for, you know, food service workers, fast food type workers. That was the U.S. Chamber of Commerce says that, you know, they're not opposed to raising the minimum wage. It hasn't increased since 2009. So there's some give from the business community. They just think 15 is too high. And they point to that states like California and New York and cities like Seattle and Washington, D.C. have all raised their minimum wage. And those are big, expensive cities. And they're already going to $15 an hour. Yeah. Then maybe we don't need to move as fast for an Alabama or Mississippi.
We're speaking with Eric Morath, economics reporter at the Wall Street Journal. His story is called What to Know About President Biden's $15 an Hour Minimum Wage Plan. So if this were approved to go into effect incrementally, that would mean that, say, companies or cities or states could not go below that in terms of what they pay their employees during that time.
Yes, so that's right. The minimum wage at the federal level sets the floor. There's some states that don't have a minimum wage at all. There's some states that haven't updated their laws in years and have a much lower minimum wage than 7.25, but you have to follow the federal rate. States, and many of them, about 29, have raised the wage above the federal rate. But if the federal rate moves to 15, most, if not all, states would essentially be at that level.
Yeah. And then that always brings up the debate, obviously, or the question, do minimum wage increases lead to layoffs of employees who are deemed too expensive?
Right, right. I mean, we probably don't have an hour to talk about this, but it's probably the, you know, one of the greatest debates in economics. And you know that's, you know, there's really conflicting evidence. There's some people that say, hey, minimum wage slows hiring. Minimum wage leads to increased automation of low-wage jobs. Others say, hey, we've looked at the border of Pennsylvania and New Jersey or Pennsylvania and New York where they have different minimum wages, and they don't see a big change, in part because people, you know, go to the restaurants that are near their house. They go to the barber that's near their house. They're not necessarily going to drive even 15 or 20 minutes across state lines and hoping of saving $2 on a haircut.
Thanks, Eric. Eric Morath, economics reporter at the Wall Street Journal. 21 minutes after the hour on this morning. Here's Jennifer Koschenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
In the most ambitious U.S. effort to stave off the worst of climate change, President Biden has signed executive orders to transform the nation's heavily fossil fuel-powered economy into a clean-burning one, pausing oil and gas leasing on federal land and targeting subsidies for those industries.
With this executive order, environmental justice will be at the center of all we do, addressing the disproportionate health and environmental and economic impacts on communities of color, so-called fence line communities.
Biden has also set a goal of eliminating pollution from fossil fuel in the power sector by 2035.
Number two.
The CDC says a COVID-19 variant first detected in the UK has now been found in 26 states. The variant appears to be 50% more contagious than other strains of the virus.
Number three.
White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki says the administration is working on plans to help schools reopen.
As our COVID team has outlined, that's going to require testing materials, support for contact tracing, vaccinations for teachers, and ensuring they're equitably provided.
Officials are also exploring ways to speed up the production and distribution of vaccines, including retrofitting factories used by other vaccine manufacturers to produce the approved Pfizer and Moderna vaccines faster. Pakistan's Supreme Court has ruled that four men convicted of kidnapping and murdering journalist Daniel Pearl should go free. Pearl was working for the Wall Street Journal in 2002 when he was kidnapped in Karachi. Assailants later filmed Pearl's murder and sent it to U.S. officials. It was among the first propaganda videos created by extremists and helped to inspire other terror groups to film horrific acts of violence. So what's all this buzz about GameStop, a video game retailer whose stock price is popping far beyond what most people think it's worth? Well, it's very complicated. On one side, you have a band of mostly young day traders who coordinate on Reddit to drive up the share price of struggling companies. On the other hand, you have hedge funds and short sellers who have placed bets that a company stock will crash. We may be close to the end of this frenzy, though, as some trading platforms move to restrict GameStop trades. The SEC and White House say they are monitoring the situation.
Yeah, so a headline said something like GameStop is a bubble in its purest form or
Absolutely.
Something like that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Thanks, Jen.
Innovation, resilience, agility. It's how Michigan businesses continue to build the future. Our expertise, talented workforce, and proven adaptability are making a difference now and shaping the future. Join us and make your mark where it matters. Visit michiganbusiness.org/radio to put your plans in motion. That's michiganbusiness.org/radio.
Thanks for being with us. Coronavirus vaccines are the light at the end of a very dark tunnel, the good news and the bad news. While the light may be closer as more people get vaccinated, the end of the tunnel is still far away, even for those who've received a vaccine. Here to explain the finer points of what happens after vaccination is Elizabeth Buchwald, reporter at MarketWatch. Elizabeth, what should we know?
So first, I didn't realize that after you get the second dose of the vaccine, you're not completely at the levels of immunity that the vaccines promise from trial data. You actually have to wait 2 weeks. So then after those 2 weeks, you have either 94% chance of not getting a severe case of COVID, essentially, or 95% chance. The difference doesn't make that much of a difference. But you can still get an asymptomatic case of coronavirus. It's unlikely that you get symptoms. So you could still transmit it to people, and that's where things are a little dicey.
Yeah. All right. So answer some of those questions then that are in your headline. Are you better off getting on a plane or visiting family? What about a mask?
Mask definitely is a yes. I think people are going to want to take it off just to show I got my vaccine, I'm safe, but it's going to cause more stress. I would hate to be in a supermarket even if someone promised to me that they had the vaccine. I think it would just cause too much confusion. So there's that sense of, we want consistency, but also, again, they could still transmit it. Indoor dining, I spoke to two infectious disease doctors who were both like, stay away from it as much as possible. I think it's a huge risk, obviously, because everyone has their masks off, and you could spread something very easily. You're inside, you're confined. And then visiting family, that was a very interesting question that I was able to ask a bunch of experts. And they were saying that if you're vaccinated and perhaps the elderly family friend or acquaintance is also vaccinated, it's a good idea to actually visit them. Keep your mask on, though. But I think elderly people in particular have been so isolated throughout this crisis that they could use the companionship in person. Yeah.
So true. My dad being one of them. We're speaking with Elizabeth Buchwald, reporter at MarketWatch. She's got a good story about what happens once you've gotten your COVID-19 vaccination. Any of these experts talk about when we might be totally mask-free?
A couple of people that I've spoken to think that we could start potentially seeing people go around in public without masks in the late fall earliest, but there's also kind of the assumption that we'll be in masks for a while. People have gotten more used to it, and it might be effective at, say, preventing the common cold and the flu. So if more people are getting used to it anyway, why revert back to that old way of life?
Thanks, Elizabeth. Elizabeth Buchwald, reporter at MarketWatch. Fellas, it's 2021, the year of the rally, the one where we kick 2020 into the rearview mirror and start changing things for the better. So why not dress the part? Be the man that's always on this year with Cuts Clothing. They redesigned the simplest classics like the plain tee from the ground up, combining cutting-edge fabric technology with intelligent, minimalist design to get the next-level comfort you have to wear to believe. The one that I love for winter is the new hoodie. The Hyperloop French Terry fabric they developed not only feels buttery soft like the signature Pika fabric on their shirts, but it's temperature controlled. You never have to take it off. And just like me, you won't want to. Entrepreneurs, mavericks, athletes, podcast hosts, everyone loves Cuts. They're echoing GQ. It's the only shirt worth wearing. Let's kick off 2021 the right way, starting with your wardrobe. Get 15% off your first order by going to cutsclothing.com/Gordon. That's cutsclothing.com/Gordon for 15% off the only shirt worth wearing.
Blocking out the noise and bringing you the facts. You're listening to America's First News, This Morning with Gordon Deal.
Thanks for joining us. Welcome into Thursday, January 28. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koshenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. Homeland Security issues an advisory about domestic extremism. Biden signs executive orders regarding climate change. With a Trump impeachment conviction unlikely, some senators are exploring censure instead. It was 35 years ago today. The nation was shocked by the explosion of the space shuttle Challenger. Actress Cloris Leachman has died at 94 of natural causes. Apple earned a record $28.7 billion in profit in the fourth quarter. And customers leaving massive tips with notes that read, COVID sucks. That story in about 20 minutes. In April of 2009... federal intelligence officials issued a prescient warning to police departments around the country about right-wing extremists trying to recruit and radicalize returning military veterans. Experts in the Department of Homeland Security wrote that their training, skills, and knowledge have the potential to boost the capabilities of extremists, including lone wolves or small terrorist cells, to carry out violence. But the call to action was effectively buried. Is it being sounded again? We're joined now by Brett Murphy, investigative reporter at USA Today. Brett, take us through this.
So there's a team inside of Homeland Security. There were the extremism and radicalization branch, and they had started researching domestic terrorists, white supremacy, right-wing extremism for months, starting at the end of Bush 2's administration. And very early on in the Obama administration, they had sent a memo report to police departments around the country telling them, amongst other things, domestic terrorism, we might see a spike in it because of the election of a black president. A lot of these white supremacist groups are recruiting. We expect to see a rise in lone wolf attacks. And we're particularly worried about, the analyst said, we're particularly worried about the recruitment of military veterans, people coming back from the forever wars in the Middle East, who may be recruited into these groups. They were telling them that, because this is what DH does, they're not law enforcement, but they are in the business of analyzing intelligence and sharing it with police departments and law enforcement who can do something. So that was the warning that went out in 2009.
Boy, all right. So essentially, you've got military of veterans, to a certain extent, being accused of being a potential terror threat.
Yeah,
and that didn't sit well.
So that was the way it was categorized. It was categorized as the DHS here, Janet Napolitano's DHS and Obama administration are categorizing military veterans as a terrorist threat. They're painting with a broad brush. They are using the example of Timothy McVeigh, who is the Oklahoma City bomber and a veteran himself, as some sort of representative of all veterans. It was seized upon very quickly by both right-wing media and several politicians as doing just that, as dishonoring military men and women. In fact, the report itself, the language in the report itself, I don't think speaks as quite as categorical as that. It was more of a warning about the way that these groups may be looking to recruit certain members of the military. And, you know, it goes without saying the vast majority of military veterans do not end up in domestic terrorist organizations. Mm-hmm. And I think everyone knows that, but that quickly became the backlash right after that report went out.
We're speaking with Brett Murphy, investigative reporter at USA Today. His piece is called "A 2009 Warning About Right-Wing Extremism Was Engulfed by Politics. There Are Signs It's Happening Again." All right, so fast forward to today then, Brett.
Yeah, so there was a similar sort of language used by the Biden administration. I mean, he said he chose to run after Charlottesville, and he has not kept quiet his plans to crack down on domestic terrorism, on white supremacy. He's already announced a review of DHS and FBI intelligence on these groups. And again, what you're seeing happening, I think, is it sort of echoes that backlash from 2009, which seeing is lawmakers, politicians, really strong personalities in right-wing media coming out against those sorts of warnings or those sorts of plans as, you know, an example of government oppression, of silencing and surveilling oppositional thought. And, the narrative is Democrats are looking to paint all Republicans as white supremacists. Mm. And when you do that, you know, it kind of creates that same sort of political sideshow that had shifted the focus back in 2009, shifted the focus away from actually doing something, which is what some in DHS, especially those intelligence analysts, were hoping for, into a, you know, this sort of like political kabuki thing where no one's actually talking about the substance anymore, more just fighting over the words being used.
So is there any way to categorize how problematic right-wing extremism or white supremacy is today and what's being done about it?
The data is pretty clear. A lot of there was certainly a spike. You know, it really did start, I think, in the Obama administration, but over the past 4 years during the Trump administration, there were, you know, several cases that that I believe were rising, and the data shows that it's the most serious domestic terror threat now is right-wing extremism.
Thanks, Brett Murphy, investigative reporter at USA Today. Hey, thanks for joining us. Welcome into Friday Eve. It is time now for the mic drop with this morning's Mike Gavin.
Good morning. Well, it's safe to say that a North Carolina man thought he was having an unlucky day when he hit two deer with his car on the way to work. So much so, in fact, that he decided to go back home, get into bed, and go to sleep. After waking up, he decided then to check his lottery tickets and found out that he matched all five of the white balls in the Mega Millions, defying odds of 1 in 12.6 million to win $2 million.
Wow.
Among the first things he's going to do with his new riches, fix the car that got wrecked by the deer.
Fix the car or buy a new car?
Yeah, it said fix the car, but
really?
It was me. I'm ditching the car, which was obviously unlucky, and yeah. And could get buying
true.
A new car. If it was me, but maybe he's more frugal than I am.
I was going to say, it could be a new lesson in frugalness.
Yeah, well,
frugality.
Yeah, he did say most of the money he's just going to put in the bank. He did say he's going to, you know, maybe fix up the house a little bit,
yeah.
fix up the car,
wow.
and then just kind of put the rest in the bank. So, you know, good money management skills on this guy.
Very humble approach, indeed. You know what I've been turned on to lately is this my lottery dream home.
Yes,
which I find is a fascinating story. There was a guy recently, like suburban Chicago, won like $4 million.
Yeah.
And was not willing to part with more than like $100,000 for,
right.
for his home or something.
Right.
Just astonishing. Like suddenly, there are certain people get
yeah.
that money and just sort of freeze.
Yeah. Well, it's really, really easy. Easier than you think, I think, to blow like millions of dollars.
Yeah.
You can do that really quickly and kind of get yourself in a bad way very quickly if you're not careful.
Well, this guy kind of earned it. I don't know if he earned $2 million.
Yeah,
but he
yeah.
certainly deserves something for
right.
that for that day.
And speaking of the Carolinas, we know restaurants have been upping the ante on spicy food for some time, but this challenge is only to be attempted by professional spice eaters. A Canadian man with a love for spicy food, perhaps trying to keep warm this winter, broke a Guinness World record by eating 3 Carolina Reaper chili peppers, the hottest chili peppers in the world, in under 10 seconds.
Oh.
Guinness shared video of the man named Mike Jack downing the 3 peppers in 9.72 seconds during his attempt in London, Ontario. The record-keeping organization says the rules required each pepper to weigh at least 0.18 ounces. Jack also had to prove a certificate verifying the chili peppers he ate during the attempt were in fact Carolina Reapers.
Mm.
Carolina Reaper peppers reach over 2 million on the Scoville scale for measuring heat. By comparison, bell peppers are a 0 on the scale. Jalapenos are between 2,500 and 8,000, and habaneros are between 100,000 and 350,000.
So now
he's over 2 million with
yeah.
the.
That's like 1,000 times hotter or whatever the math
yeah.
may be.
I can't even
that.
Imagine. Somebody gave me Carolina Reaper hot sauce one time because I know I like spicy food.
Yeah.
They gave me the hot sauce and I didn't realize how hot it was going to be. I had no idea. I put a couple of drops on and
right.
I was sweating for like, you know, for a couple
really?
Hours after that.
I've never had that.
Yeah. It's you got to really kind of prepare yourself for that. And again, not more than a couple drops at the very most.
Oh, man. Thank you, Mike.
This year, Michigan businesses have had to adapt. And the Michigan Economic Development Corporation was right there alongside them, helping to connect businesses to new resources, meet new partners, and access the additional capital they needed right from the start. If your business needs support to reach its new potential, the MEDC is available to help in any way we can. Contact us today for customized business assistance at michiganbusiness.org/partnership.
Exclusive stories and unique perspectives. You're listening to America's First News, This Morning with Gordon Deal.
Thanks for being with us. It's been a big week for GameStop shares. The struggling video game retailer was trading above $330 a share yesterday, more than double its close Tuesday. Over the last 3 weeks, shares have surged more than 1,000%. USA Today says the primary reason is smaller investors who've banded together in places like Reddit under the subreddit r/WallStreetBets. Investors have been short selling this stock because of the retailer's ongoing struggles. As those investors bet on GameStop's price to sink, a group of traders on Reddit have joined together to drive the stock price higher. And it's not just GameStop. Shares of AMC Entertainment jumped more than 230% yesterday as the Twitter trend #SaveAMC spread amid concerns the movie theater chain might file for bankruptcy. On a related note, trading apps such as Robinhood, TD Ameritrade, E-Trade, and Charles Schwab all appeared to suffer from outages. 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Once again, here's Jennifer Koshenka.
And now, the 3 big things you need to know. Number 1.
The Department of Homeland Security is warning of a continuing threat posed by domestic extremists, cautioning that a heightened threat in the environment across the country would likely persist into the spring. The bulletin says there's no current evidence of a specific plot, but that authorities remain concerned that individuals frustrated with the exercise of governmental authority and the presidential transition could continue to mobilize a broad range of ideologically motivated actors to incite incite or commit violence.
Number two.
Democratic Senator Tim Kaine of Virginia says he's discussing with colleagues whether to censure, to condemn former President Trump for his role in the deadly January 6th attack on the Capitol, which could be an alternative to impeachment. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer has said the impeachment trial will move forward, but Kaine's proposal is an acknowledgement that the Senate is unlikely to convict Trump of inciting the riot.
Number three.
Dangerous mudslides have trapped residents and damaged 20 to 25 homes in the coastal California county of Monterey. Michael Urquidez of the Monterey County Fire Department says the area got a lot of rain in a short amount of time.
We have a lot of private property damage. People lost a lot of mobile equipment, motor homes, vehicles, and tractors. And we're still trying to get our arms around about the total loss.
The mudslides are near the burn scar area from last summer's river fire. Some states are loosening their coronavirus restrictions on restaurants and other businesses because of improved infection and hospitalization numbers. As Michigan's coronavirus rate dropped to the nation's fifth lowest over the last 2 weeks, Governor Gretchen Whitmer says bars and restaurants can welcome indoor customers next week for the first time in 2.5 months. Cloris Leachman, the acclaimed actress whose one-of-a-kind comedic flair made her a legendary figure in film and TV for 7 decades, has died at the age of 94. Leachman played Phyllis on The Mary Tyler Moore Show.
Well, Mike, I just hope that you and Sharon will be as happy in your marriage as Lars is in mine.
Leachman won an Academy Award in 1971 for her dramatic role in The Last Picture Show. She was also memorable in Mel Brooks' 1974 classic Young Frankenstein and in her roles in 1977's High Anxiety and 1981's History of the World, Part 1.
All right. Thank you, Jen. Thanks for being with us. The government restrictions tied to the coronavirus pandemic have been a big downer for restaurant, but one pizza joint in Missouri received a bit of a boost. Sunday, loyal customers of J.J. Twiggs Pizza and Pub in Valley Park left a $2,200 tip on their meal. A Facebook post included a picture of the receipt where the customer specified that the huge gratuity was a COVID sucks tip on a meal that was $218. Customers also praised the restaurant for having the best pizza and service. Can't get enough about those generous tips in restaurants, too. 7 employees at a Colorado restaurant each went home recently with a $200 tip from the same customer. Notch Top Bakery and Cafe in Estes Park posted a picture of the $1,400 tip on Facebook. The customer, identified only as David, left the generous tip on a meal that cost just $20. He also wrote a note on the receipt with a smiley face saying, COVID sucks, $200 for each employee today. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, GEICO makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to GEICO.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. GEICO.com. Easy.